So right now we're in a sermon series at City Light called We Are City Light, exploring kind of the key things that, what is it that makes us who we are as a church? And from that, talking about what do we therefore do? What is our vision for the future? Because the reality is what you do always flows from who you are. And what makes us who we are as a church isn't so much something we do as something God has done for us. This good news of what God has done is what Christians call the gospel. It's the central message of Christianity. And it is the message of God's loving devotion to us when we were not devoted to him. And what we've been saying is once God's devotion for you really sinks deep down into your heart, as this gospel starts to change every area of your life, it creates in you a new love for God and a new love for one another. Experiencing God's devotion for you causes you to devote every area of your life to him and to devote yourself to the imperfect community that we call the church. And so those are our first two core values at City Light and what we've talked about the last 2 weeks: love for God, worship, love for one another, community. But God's devotion for us doesn't stop there. Because as I said, God devoted himself to us when we were not yet devoted to him. He loved us when we were far from him. When we were running from him, he ran after us all the way to going to the cross, to dying in our place when we were the ones who deserved it. Now, as that sinks in, of course, it does create a love for God. It creates a love for one another. But if you know that God went all the way to the cross to get you when you were far from him, how can that not also create in you a love for people who have not yet experienced that? A love for people who are still far from God. That's our third core value, what we call mission, love for our neighbors, those who are not yet part of a Bible-believing church, and that's what we're going to talk about today. The passage we're going to be in is in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, so if you have a Bible, I invite you to go ahead and turn there with me. If not, there should be one under your chair or the chair next to you. It'll be on page 986 in those Bibles, so you can go ahead and get there. In this passage, the author, Paul, is one of the first Christian leaders in the church, and he's writing this letter to one of the churches that he helped start. And in it, he's recounting to them what his relationship with them looked like when they were still far from God, when they still had not yet believed. And so what we're going to see is that his relationship with them was characterized by sharing his life and sharing the gospel with them, and that he did this as part of a community, as part of a team. And the reason he shared his life and the gospel with them is because, as we're going to see, those who have received the gospel are also then entrusted with the gospel. Let me say that again. Those who have received the gospel are also then entrusted with the gospel. And what that means is we are a missional people. We are a people who have a mission that extends beyond ourselves. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about what that means, we're going to talk about how we do it, and we're going to talk about why we do it. What, how, why. So look with me at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. I'll begin reading at the beginning of the chapter up through verse 8. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been improved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed, God is witness. Nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So, being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. So first, what? What's it mean that we are a missional people? Well, as I said, it means that we are a community that has a mission that extends outside of ourselves. Because as we saw in verse 4 here, What Paul says about him and his team is that though they were first recipients of the gospel, they believed the gospel, they were approved by God then to be entrusted with it. Which means this good news, this message, was a message that they received. And then God says, I want you to now be the ones who go and take this message and give it to others. But I want you to not only take this message and give it, say the words of it, I want you also to share your very own selves. So that's what we see them doing. We see them being sent by God, entrusted with the gospel, to share the message of the gospel, and to share their very own selves as well. Now, before I go any further into this, I want to address the fact that some of you may be here today, in fact, I know, some of you here today fall into this neighbor category. You're people who aren't yet part of a Bible-believing church. You may not even be very familiar with Christianity or familiar with the gospel. You may be very familiar with it and know for a fact that you don't believe it. And what I'm going to be doing today is talking to a lot of the Christians in the room and basically telling them to love you and then telling them how to love you. So I'm really glad you're here because we would love your feedback. We would love for you to tell us what are the things we do that make you genuinely feel loved and cared for, and what are the things we do that are just a little weird that you'd be happy if we just stopped, okay? So be honest. Tell your friend who brought you. Tell me after the service because that's the goal. That's the thing that we're after. One of our core values is not to be this insulated community that's all about each other, but to actually be loving the people outside of our community so that we have a great city and not just a great church. And so we would love to hear from you on that. But you've probably already caught this. One undeniable part of how I'm going to tell the people in this room to love you is to speak the words of the gospel to you. And that may be weird, okay? That may be weird if they try to do it. It may be weird today as I try to do it. Because the gospel starts with the good news that God created us for a perfect relationship with him, with one another, and with the world around us, what the Bible calls peace, kind of this all-encompassing peace with God and each other. But it quickly progresses to say that all of us have devoted ourselves, whether we believe in God, whether we don't, we've given our lives and our deepest love and affection to something that's not God, something other than him. And that's just hard to hear, right? And therefore, God says that we are actually guilty before him and accountable to his judgment, which is another word that's not terribly comfortable. It goes on to say that the only way we can be free from that is that we actually can't fix ourselves. The only hope we have is if God becomes a human and basically does it for us, lives the perfect life we couldn't live, dies in our place, taking the penalty that we deserve, and then raises from the dead, enabling us to have the eternal life that we were originally intended. And we say the only way somebody can receive this and be free from God's judgment to instead receive his approval is if they place their trust entirely in Jesus. Not by doing any good works, but by trusting in the good works of Jesus on their behalf. And we hold that to be true, not just like something that's true for me, and there's something different that's true for you, but that this story that we find in the Bible presents itself as the story of all of humanity. So that not only am I created by God, not only have I sinned, and therefore need the grace of God, and can only be saved through trust in him, you were created by God, you have sinned, you need the grace of God, and can only receive it through Jesus. Now, as I say those things, you may be wondering, where do you get off? Like, who are you to, if you want to believe this Jesus thing, okay, that's fine. But who are you to tell me that I ought to believe the things that you believe? Furthermore, I certainly don't want you telling the people in your church that it's their mission to somehow come and convert me and tell me I'm wrong and tell me that I have to believe the things that you believe. Look, I get that, okay? And I'm not here to apologize for all the ways that this has been done in really weird ways by Christians throughout the years. And so if you've had the kind of like slick used car salesman, like, hey, let me tell you about Jesus, and this is why I'm better than you, and this is why you suck, and why if you were more like me, you'd be going to heaven too, because we're the good people and you're not, and let's fix you. Okay, like, I get that that happens, and I'm sorry. Because the reality is we haven't always done this right. I haven't always done this right. Like, I do this imperfectly, and the person that you're here with today maybe has too. Let us know, okay? We do want to know where that is happening. But the thing that we can't get around is that this is the message, right? This is something that we hold to be true. And so I want to just address that briefly. Like, where do we get off, you know? And I actually think what's interesting is in this passage, Paul, the author, kind of indirectly does address this. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 2, he says that we preach the gospel, and we did so in the midst of much conflict. He's saying we declared this message, even though people were pretty mad at us about it. And then in verse 3, he starts to tell us why. He kind of starts to answer the question, where do you get off? How can you be saying this when you're facing such opposition? And what he begins by saying in verse 3 is that his appeal does not spring from error or impurity or an attempt to deceive. But just as we have been improved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak. He's basically saying, I was entrusted with a message, and therefore I have a commission to go do something that I didn't make up, and to relay a message that I didn't create. Sometimes when people picture Christians, they think, okay, Christians have their beliefs, they know that other people have their beliefs, but Christians think they're better than everyone else. And so they cracked up this idea of hell so they could tell everyone else, this is why you're wrong and why we're right and why you should be more like us. But as Christians, we really believe that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And that means if he says something, we just don't feel the freedom to change that. Like, we can't filter that and say, well, I like that part, but I don't like that part. Because we really believe he's the Lord, and he's given us a message that he's entrusted us with. Jesus is the one who said in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to the Father but through me. So when he says that, I don't know how to massage that to make it mean something different than what it clearly seems to be saying. That's a message we've been entrusted with, and it's a message we feel responsible to convey accurately because it's not one that we made up. And so Christians didn't just get together and say, how can we make everyone feel bad for believing things that are different than what we believe? We received a message, and we're trying to relay that. And furthermore, the message is, if what you're hearing is, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm the good person, you're not, become like me, that person is not conveying the gospel to you. The message of the gospel isn't I'm right, you're wrong. The message of the gospel is we're both wrong. We're both so screwed up that the only way we could be right with God is if Jesus came for us. It's more like an orphan who's been adopted, who now goes to the other orphans and says, you should meet my father, right? Like, it doesn't have to be the way it is. There's actually a way out. He wants more children. I want to introduce you to him. That's what we're trying to do. But we just don't feel the freedom to make stuff up about our Father. We want to give you the real version. We want to give him to you as he's revealed himself to us. Furthermore, if we really do believe this stuff, like if we really believe Jesus rose from the dead, and he did say that he's the way, the truth, and the life, that no one can come to the Father but through him, how could we not share that with other people? Like, how could we not want others to believe that? There's a tandem of magicians, Penn and Teller, that you've maybe heard of in Las Vegas. And Penn Jillette happens to be a kind of well-known atheist in the atheist community. But he had an interesting insight on this that I want to read to you. He said, I've always said that I don't respect people who don't proselytize. So this is an atheist, but he's saying, I don't respect people who don't share the gospel. He says, I don't respect that at all. If you believe that there's a heaven and a hell, and people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life, and you think that it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward? How much do you have to hate somebody to not proselytize? And atheists think people shouldn't proselytize and just say, leave me alone and keep your religion to yourself. How much do you have to hate somebody to believe everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? I mean, if I believed beyond the shadow of a doubt that a truck was coming at you and you didn't believe the truck was bearing down on you, there is a certain point where I tackle you. And this is actually more important than that. What he's saying is, if we really believe the things we claim to believe here, it would be totally hypocritical of us to say, yeah, but you know what? I like our friendship. I don't want to make this awkward. So I'm just going to keep it to myself. Let that truck keep coming at you. We have to share it if we truly believe it. But third, the thing that Paul points out in this passage is that this isn't a sales pitch, okay? So he says, going on in verse 5, we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed, God is witness, nor did we seek glory from people. I understand that I cannot make someone believe something that they don't want to believe. That's not the goal. That shouldn't be the goal of any Christian, right? And that's what Paul's saying. Look, we didn't try to flatter you. We didn't try to massage this in so that you would like it, and then we could get you in and manipulate you to believing something that you don't already believe. I get it. You're going to believe what you want to believe. But I want you to believe this, okay? Because I think it's true. Because I think it's the only hope for eternal life and for your joy. And yet, I'm not going to do that by kind of dressing it up and making it seem all nice so that you'll like it. We're not here to manipulate anyone. We're here to relay the message that we have been entrusted with. And like, I like that, okay? I like it when people just give it to me like it is. It's one thing I love about being in Philadelphia. So a lot of you aren't from Philly and you move here and you say, I like Philly, the city's cool, but the people are so mean, you know? And okay, like maybe there's some fairness. I'm from central Pennsylvania. The people are somewhat similar, but I agree there's like maybe a higher level of meanness here in Philly. But it's refreshing in some ways, right? Like people, you know where people are at. If they think you're an idiot, they'll just tell you. And okay, I'm not going to defend doing it in a way that's like jerkish and arrogant and that kind of thing. Okay, you can do it with gentleness and respect, right? And actually, you see here in verse 7, Paul says, we were gentle among you, and yet we declared the gospel of God. I like it when people just give it to me like it is, man. Just tell me the truth. In a world where everything gets kind of spun, you know, politics, advertising, whatever, you're always getting like, let me just tell you exactly what you want to hear. It's refreshing to read the Bible and for God to just say, I don't really care how this is going to hit you. I need to tell it to you because it's true. I want that, okay? I like it. I could stand up here and say to you, hey, look, we basically believe all the same things, you know? Let's all just get along. But we don't. Like, I believe Jesus rose from the dead. If you're not a Christian, I'm guessing you don't believe that. That's different, right? That doesn't mean we have to hate each other, right? Like, I have really good friends who do not agree with me on that. I'm in this group text with, like, 10 guys I grew up with. I get 100 messages a day from them. None of them believe Jesus rose. It's funny. People see my text, and they're like, wow, you're a really popular guy. Nope. I have 9 friends, okay? They just text me all the time. And they text each other, really. I'm more of a spectator. But anyway, these guys don't believe that Jesus rose from the dead, and we don't have to hate each other. But let's not pretend we all believe the same things when, in fact, we do not. This is the message that we have been entrusted with. Now, I'm focusing on kind of one aspect of what it means to be a missional people, this idea of declaring the gospel, because it tends to be the more controversial than life. But I want you to see both things are happening here. It's the sharing of our own selves, and it's the sharing of the gospel as well. So now let's talk about how we actually do that. How do we share our lives and the gospel with people? Well, when we look at Scripture, we see that there's kind of four aspects throughout the lives of God's people in Scripture that they use to share their lives and the gospel with people who aren't yet a part of that community. The first is prayer. And I admit prayer's not actually in this particular passage. This passage is more dealing with what did Paul do when he was with them, whereas prayer is often something that he's doing throughout that whole process and perhaps something he was doing before he even went to them. But if you expand and you read the whole Bible, you'll see prayer is all over the place, and prayer for people outside of the community is all over the place. So Paul says in Romans 10:1, when he's praying for his brothers in Israel, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them is that they may be saved. He goes on in 1 Timothy 2 to instruct. He says, first of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for who? For all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. So a great place to start, if you want to love your neighbors, is just start praying for people who aren't yet a part of your community, you know, who aren't yet a part of your church. Start as big as your mind can go. Start with the globe. Start praying for global issues. Pick a country. Start praying for people in that country. Start praying for God to work there. Narrow it a bit. Pray for your country. Pray for the U.S. Pray for the issues that we're facing. Narrow it even more. Spend especially devoted time praying for the city of Philadelphia, the city that you're a part of, that God has called you to for this time. Pray for its welfare, for its peace, for its prosperity. And then we want to encourage you to narrow it even further than that and to think of a few people, a few names that you can really get specific with in praying for. We encourage people to have 3 names. Start with 3. I don't know why we picked that number. You got to start somewhere, okay? Start with 3 names of people who live in the Philly area, who live here, who aren't yet a part of a Bible-believing church, and ask this question. What would it take for their lives to be truly joyful? And start asking God to give them those things. Of course, you want God to reveal himself to them. You know that's the key to lasting joy. But it may also be God provide them a house, you know. God, provide them with a job. God, help them with this difficult relationship that they have at work. God, give them a raise. God, you know, whatever the things you see in their lives that you know, man, their lives would be so much better if they had this. Start just praying and asking God to do those things. And we encourage you to use an index card, write the names down on the index card, and commit to weekly, at least, just getting that out. Could take 5 minutes, could take an hour, you could do it every day, that's up to you. But make a regular pattern of praying for people who aren't yet a part of a Bible-believing church, and just start. It could be literal neighbors, people in your neighborhood. It could be coworkers. It could be classmates. It could be people you do hobbies with. People that God has given you relationships with that you are in proximity to. Narrow that list a bit to start praying for specific people. When you do that, you're acknowledging that I'm actually only one slice of the pie here. That in order for this person's life to be truly joyful, in order to truly love them, I actually need the God of the universe to be the one who's working in them and providing for them. I just can't do it. And so you're doing something significant to love people when you are interceding on their behalf before God. So start by praying for people outside the community. The next thing we say is to love. So we say pray, love, introduce, speak. These are kind of the four aspects of loving people. Now, this is a little redundant, right? So how do you love your neighbors? Love them. Okay, not helpful. But what we're talking about here is kind of what we would traditionally think of as meeting basic needs. Loving action towards people. So again, think about concentric circles, right? Think about how could I be committing loving actions towards the world around me. And often it starts by just doing your job well, doing the main thing that God has called you to do. Look at verse 9 with me. We didn't read this at the beginning. But in 1 Thessalonians 2:8, Paul says, we share with you the gospel and our own selves. Then he kind of explains it a little in verse 9. He says, you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. He was saying, I was among this unbelieving city, and instead of coming in and saying, hey, I've got some good spiritual news for you, give me some money and then I'll pay you back. There's some televangelists out there who do stuff like that. He came in and he worked an honest job, right? And that blessed the city that he was a part of. It made the city a better place because he was doing his job well and serving his neighbors. So start with your classes, start with your job, and work well. Look at your workplace and say, how could I make this a better place for everyone to work? How could we produce something that really blesses the people in the city of Philadelphia and the people around us? Go ahead and look at the community that you are a part of. Look at your neighbors. When we look at the city of Philadelphia and we look at our neighbors, what are some of the needs that we find? We find Philadelphia has a large concentration of poor and marginalized people. And that's why our city groups are each taking active steps to connect with a community service partner to be engaged in serving in some way in the community. But we have a long way to go in this. We have a lot of room to grow in this. And one of the things we can do to love our neighbors here in Philadelphia is to be engaged in social justice, engaged in the needs of the poor and marginalized in the city. But then narrow it again, right? Take that list of three people that you're praying for and ask not only, God, what could you do to make their lives more joyful, but God, how do you want to use me? What are some of the basic needs that I notice in their life that I could start to step in and meet? This person has kids and their kids are crazy. Babysit, you know? This person works a really difficult job. They don't have time to do much. Buy them groceries. Cook them dinner. This person just needs some people to hang out with. Could use some relationship time. Invite them over for dinner. Sharing meals together can be one of the most profound, easy ways to love and bless your neighbors who don't yet know Jesus, your coworkers who don't yet know Jesus, your classmates who aren't yet part of a Bible-believing church. When you're thinking about praying for them, ask them, how can I pray for you? Once a week, I like to pray for some friends of mine who aren't yet part of my church. Are there some specific ways that I can pray for you? Even people who don't know Jesus are often like, whatever, I'm probably not going to work, but you want to pray for me? Go right ahead, you know, and then I'll give you a few things to pray for. If you want to know what's going to increase their joy, ask them. They often have a good idea. And then simply enjoy relationships with people. This is someone who is created in the image of God. Enjoy spending time with people, with things that you do have in common with them that you can do together. Third, introduce. So one of the things to notice in 1 Thessalonians 2:8 here is it's being affectionately desirous of you. We were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves. Paul was not this individual missionary just doing his own thing. He went with a team. And that meant the people he was reaching out to weren't just seeing the way the gospel changed him. They were seeing the way the gospel had created loving relationships between him and the others in his community. And so a key part of loving our neighbors is also introducing them to our family. It's saying to them, I don't just want you to meet my father. I want you to meet my new brothers and sisters. When people see you and you're the only Christian they know, you're the only relationship they have with someone who's walking with Jesus, they can kind of say, well, you're just a nice person, you know? You're just the guy at the office who doesn't swear or whatever it might look like. I don't know, some Christians swear. But, you know, they say, whatever, you're just a nice person. But when they experience a community of people who are loving one another in sacrificial ways, when they see two people who shouldn't really have a relationship with one another, like sociology would tell us, these aren't the two people that would naturally hang out, but they see them loving and serving one another, it's a little harder to just chalk that up to, well, I guess these are just really nice people. People have to experience the kind of relationships the gospel creates, and that only happens as they're introduced to your community. And so again, this doesn't necessarily have to mean a major addition to your life. Look at the things you're already doing. And last week, we encouraged you, how could you just do those things with other people? Well, just expand that scope a little bit. Instead of just saying, how could I do those things with other Christians, how could I also do those things with people who aren't yet part of a Bible-believing church? You like to play sports? Cool. Do it with, bring some Christian friends. Bring some friends who don't yet know Jesus. An easy way to do this is invite people to church, right? And when people come to a church gathering, they meet your community. You develop a relationship with them, and they get to actually hear the gospel on top of that. You might as well try it, right? People think, well, they'll all say no. Maybe, but how bad is that, right? Just go ahead and invite them. The good news is, even if people say no, you don't have to stop there. You can actually bring the church to them if they won't come to church, because the church is not just this gathering. The church is the people. It's the community, and you can come together with other friends of yours who know and love Jesus to say, how could we love and serve these friends of mine who aren't yet part of a Bible-believing church? But that's going to take intentional thought, right? Like, that may not already be built into your life. It's going to take you saying, well, who are just two or three people that I could come together with and that we could choose to, together with one another, love those who aren't yet a part of our community? It may mean inviting those who aren't part of your community into it. It may mean that you guys say, you know what, this weekend we would normally just hang out with each other, but we're actually going to go to this other thing in order to get ourselves around some people who don't yet know Jesus, in order to just love them and bless them and be used by God in their lives. And so introduce those outside of your community to your community to give them a full picture of just what the gospel does when it changes a people. Lastly, you speak. Pray, love, introduce, speak. The one thing you can't miss in this passage is that Paul and his team are declaring the good news of the gospel. Here's the deal. The good news of the gospel includes the good news of Jesus' perfect life, his death on the cross, and his resurrection from the dead. Nobody will conclude that because you're a nice guy. Hey, I helped the guy out. I brought him dinner this week. Jesus must have died on the cross for my sin. Doesn't work that way, okay? This is good news, and good news has to actually be verbalized. You have to actually say the words. And I know that's scary, okay? It's scary for a number of reasons. You're afraid of the relationship. Some of you are afraid because I'm not even sure what I would say. If you can remember four words, I believe you have the power to share the good news of the gospel with the people around you. If you can remember these four words, God, sin, cross, response. God, sin, cross, response. First, God is perfect, loving, and holy, and created us for a loving relationship with him. Second, we have turned from God and worshiped other things, and therefore there's a break in our relationship with God. Third, Jesus came, lived the perfect life, died in our place, taking the penalty we deserve, and rose from the dead, cross. Fourth response, how does someone receive that? We receive that as we place our trust in Jesus, not by anything we do, but by receiving with an open hand what Jesus has done on our behalf. You can share and declare the good news of the gospel through that. Not only that, but if you've received that good news, it's changed your life in some way. And so you can also simply convey, can I just tell you what God has done in my life? And everybody's really worried that if you did this, it would make your relationship really awkward. Here's the easy thing you can do. Just ask permission. Just ask someone, would it be okay with you if I told you kind of the main things that I believe about God? would it be okay with you if I told you the way God has changed my life? If they say no, okay, they don't want to hear it. But if they say yes, they've given you permission. Just go ahead and tell them, here's the things I believe. If you do it in a kind of non-jerk, hey, here's the message, here's what I believe, it doesn't have to be as awkward as it is in your mind. But if they don't hear it, they're not going to conclude it just because you're a nice guy. Speaking is a key part of this process. And of course, inviting them to church, exposing them to other materials helps that process because then they're hearing it from multiple different people. Now, if you're really hearing me through this, you're probably getting uncomfortable. Because the reality is, this is costly. Like even just to pray for people, you're like, oh, I don't know, that would take time and intentionality and planning. And that's the easiest thing. Like you don't have to go meet a single person. You just have to talk to God and write some names down. But already it's like, eh, I don't know, I don't think that's really going to happen in my life. And then we're talking about loving. Oh, geez, so I have to actually move towards and get to know someone. I can't just be detached from the needs of the city around me. I have to actually be engaged in the needs of the poor and marginalized. Oh, I can't just go into work and make the goal of my day at work to simply get to the end of the day and get my next promotion. I have to think about how to bless my coworkers and how to serve my boss and how to make my work a better place for people to work. Oh man, I can't just spend time with the people that I already enjoy spending time with. I have to actually move outside of what's comfortable to me and move towards people who are different. I can't just do it all on my own. I have to actually introduce people to my community. And half the time, my community's kind of wacky. And so I don't know what they're going to think if they meet my Christian friends, and that's going to be weird. That's strange. I have to speak the words of the God. You want me to speak to people about Jesus? That's scary. I don't know what to say. They might reject me. Love is costly. Loving anyone is costly. And so, of course, loving your neighbors is going to be costly as well. And when we hold on, when we say, I don't want to pay the cost, it prevents us from genuinely loving our neighbors. And this happens a few ways for Christians usually. One is we just totally retreat and kind of create this Christian enclave. And that's a big temptation in a city like Philadelphia, okay? It's probably not news to any of you that Philly's not like the most churched area in the world. Like, we don't have just a ton of Christians running around here in Philly. And the estimates lately are that 9 out of 10 people are not in a church gathering on Sundays. I always say, if you don't want to hit traffic in Philly, just drive on Sunday mornings. You know, it's the one time that nobody's out, okay? And so, that's no secret. And so, it's tempting for people who come to Philly, who come here, to just want, just give me a Christian bubble that I can stay in, keep my head down so I can get through grad school, get on to the next phase of my life, and not get beaten by the challenges of the world. Okay, like, we do want the church to be a counterculture, okay? You shouldn't come here and expect it to be just like the city. It's not going to be. But the reason we are a counterculture is for the good of the city. It's for the people who aren't yet here. And so we are going to be going out and loving them. And that kind of desire just reveals that your love for people has not yet gotten to the place where you care enough about them to be made uncomfortable on their behalf. Okay, so you're a Christian and you say, oh, you know what, I agree, we need to be out there doing something. And so what some Christians will do is they'll share the gospel, but not their lives. So this is your classic kind of TV preacher, bullhorn guy on the corner who's yelling at people, telling them the gospel, but not actually loving anyone in any kind of tangible way. And so I actually think it's totally legitimate for people to say, you know what, I'm just not going to listen to this guy. So if you're one of those people who's like, hey, should I stop and listen to them? No, don't bother, right? Because they've proven by their actions that they don't really love you, don't really care about you. Because in some ways, it's actually easier to just give a message to someone than to actually get involved in their lives. Because as soon as you get involved in somebody's lives, it's messy, right? You're going to find that, man, they need a babysitter. Man, they need money. Man, they need help. Man, they need someone to serve them. Man, they need my time, my energy. That's what it costs to actually love people. And if you don't love people enough, but you want to feel like a good Christian, you can just go and give them a message and run away. And that's what a lot of Christians do. That's what a lot of worshiping communities with no mission look like. We hang out with each other, we have fun together, and then every now and then we send someone out to share the gospel and get back here as quickly as possible. Because it's scary and we don't actually like those people, and so we try to spend as little time around them as possible, then we get together and talk about how bad they are and how great we are. That's not love for our neighbors. That's not the kind of love that we see here, right? We see here a team of Christians who are loving others with their lives and with the gospel. So that's one extreme. I share the good news. I heard a pastor once call this burp evangelism. He says, you go up to people, it's like vomiting on them. You feel better, and they are disgusted, right? And that's what often happens when you're sharing the gospel, but not your life, okay? On the flip side, I think this is going to be the more common problem in this room and in this church. It's certainly my problem, okay? It's the, yeah, we don't want to be those Christians. We don't want to be this fundamentalist, man. We're in the world. We're engaging people. So we're not going to just hang in this Christian bubble. We're going to be engaged in the city, and no one ever talks about Jesus. Never declare the words of the gospel, the very thing we've been entrusted with, and we just never get around to it, right? Because we're so busy hanging out and loving and being fun and belonging. Like, that seems to be what I want. Like, I just love the feeling of belonging. I love the feeling of being one of the guys. So I don't like the fact that, like, in my neighborhood, oh, I only know the other Christians. No, I want to belong. I want to be in the community. And then talking about Jesus feels like a threat to that. And what it shows is I don't really love those people. I love me. I love the feeling of belonging. I love the feeling of being comfortable. I love the feeling of being accepted. But just like Penn Jillette, an atheist, said, I don't love them enough to share the good news of the gospel that I have been entrusted with. This is part of why we don't want to be, because we want to enable you and enable us as a church to be people who share our lives and the gospel and not just one or the other, this is why we don't try to load your calendar with a bunch of stuff happening here at City Light. Like, you'll find, you know, we have Sundays and we have city groups and we don't do a whole lot else. And part of that's because, like, look at how much it costs to really love people who aren't yet a part of your community. Look at the level of intentionality it takes. You can't do it with that many people, right? Like, you do have a finite amount of time and of resources. Now, some of you have way more time and resources than you think. You're like, no, I can't add anything else to my day. I need 3 hours a day to watch TV. You need those 3 hours? You're like, yeah, my work is so stressful and I just need it for myself. Maybe not. Like, consider that, okay? Maybe there's stuff in your life that feels like totally non-negotiable to you that's like probably negotiable, okay? Probably if you got some other people around you and said, hey, look at my schedule. Do you see some things that could go? They would say, yeah, I see a few, okay? But there's a limit, right? Like, there are only so many hours in the day. There's only so many people that you can really sacrificially love and move toward. That's why we don't tell you to make a prayer card with 20 people on it. Start with 3, right? But what Christians often do is they say, okay, I've got a limited amount of time, but I think I have a little more that I could start to engage with some people I don't yet know. And they look around their church and they say, well, there's 100 people here and I only really know the 12 in my city group, so I should try to make 3 more Christian friends. I get that, okay? I wish I knew everyone in this church too well, and I know people pretty well. Like, they pay me to do this, right? And so I know a lot of your names. I have more time to do this than most of you do, okay? But even I don't have time to have that level of depth of relationship with everyone in this church. And that's why my fear is, if you think that way, you are going to set yourself up to not love anyone who's not already here. And we're just going to miss out on the mission that God has given us. We've been entrusted with the gospel. If we take it and keep it here, we're not actually living out of who we truly are. Jesus calls that taking a lamp and putting it under a basket. Being a part of this great community and just making sure no one else can actually hear it and be a part of it as well. This doesn't come naturally. This kind of love isn't just, I wake up in the morning and that's what comes out of me. But the good news is, for Paul and his team, it didn't come naturally to them either. This guy who's writing this letter, Paul, he wasn't just like a kind of lazy Christian and then God woke him up. He hated Christians. He did not know Jesus. He was killing people. Okay, standing by saying, yeah, that guy preaching the gospel, execute. How did he go from that to someone who was sharing his life and the gospel with people who didn't yet know Jesus? If that can happen to him, it's possible that God could do this in you. It's possible that God could take you from, I just have no extra time, to someone who does this too. How does it happen? It happened. Paul lived this sent life. He went out because Jesus was first sent for him. There's a time when he is on the road to go kill some more Christians, and Jesus reveals himself to Paul, shows up, and says, why are you persecuting me? And instead of killing him, he forgives him. Because earlier, Jesus died in Paul's place on the cross for his sins. And when Paul experienced that, that is what made him into the kind of person who could share his life and the gospel with others. Jesus alluded to this when he was going to the cross. In John 20:21, he said, As the this is what he says to his disciples. As the Father has sent me, so now I send you. What's he saying? He's saying, I was sent for you. He's the original missionary. He's the missional person. He's the one who left the comforts of heaven. He's the one who came knowing that it could get awkward. Yeah, it got awkward for Jesus. It got awkward to the point of the cross. It cost him his life to come for you when you were far from him, when you didn't love him. He came and gave up everything so that you could have an eternal home in heaven with God. You don't need your comforts. You don't need that time that you're still holding on to. You've been given God. You've been given eternity with him. You've been given the Holy Spirit to dwell in you now because Jesus left his comforts for you, because the cost was not too high for him, because he died in your place. If you share the gospel with someone and they don't approve of you, you don't need it. You have the approval of God in Christ because Jesus came for you first. As that sinks in, if you see that Jesus is the one who was sent for me, and that's why I can now be sent out, if you receive the gospel first before you are entrusted with the gospel, that's what gives you what you need to lay down your comforts, to lay down your priorities, to lay down the other things you would hold on to go and love those who are not yet a part of your community. That's what it gave Paul. Last two things I'll look at here. In verse 4, he says, we've been entrusted with the gospel, so we speak to please God. It gave him a love for God. He says, if God has loved me in this way, I have to do this because I want to please him. I love him. And it gave him a love for people. In verse 8, it says, the reason that we shared our lives in the gospel is because you have become so dear to us. If you love Jesus, and if you love people, you can't help but share your life and the gospel with them. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It just means that when the barriers come up, there is something bigger driving you than avoiding those barriers and staying comfortable. It's that you see Jesus left all of his comforts for you. Now I can leave them and go to others. We are a missional people. We who have received the good news of the gospel are now entrusted with it to share our lives in the gospel. And look, the church staff isn't going to do that for you. We are a missional people. This is our mission together. You have a part to play in it. You are responsible. I am responsible. Jesus left everything to seek and to save you and me. And as that gets into our hearts, we can be people who pray, love, introduce, and speak to those who are not yet part of our community so that God would be glorified through us as people are reconciled to him in the way we have been reconciled to him.